Hello, lovely listeners. It's Jess, host of Literature for Life. Today's episode is once again a mashup with ADHD Cast. Me and a wonderful friend of the podcast, Tony Farina, talk about The Book Thief. This is part two of a big long conversation that me and Tony had about books, two books that we love. So last month's episode was about Still Life, and this month's episode is about The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak. So if you haven't yet listened to last month's episode, you don't have to listen to it before, but I would recommend listening to it as well, obviously. Obviously, I would recommend you listen to that episode. There are a few small spoilers in today's episode, but nothing too major. If you haven't yet read The Book Thief, I would highly recommend it. Me and Tony get a little bit choked up in this episode because we love it so much. That's it. I hope you love it.
I taught this. This book came out. A friend of mine who's a librarian, Liz, said to me, oh my God, you need to read this. And then I just didn't get around to it when it first came out. And then it won the Prince, award, which is an Australian book. Marcus Zusak is an Australian writer. So it won the Prince, which is your award, not yours. Again, I say you, because you sound British. Everybody else there is probably like, they know that you're not, but like, I know you're South African.
Everyone,
but like,
don't worry, yeah.
Yes. So you do confuse everyone. And it's funny, and I don't know if I told you this, but in Welcome to Mansfield, when Maggie and Junior first meet, Maggie says that she's British. She's like, of course. And they talk about it. She said, and this is before I met you, but the thing that always upsets Maggie is people think she's South African.
Oh, yeah.
She can't understand why.
Yeah.
So anyway, so when you get to that, it was not. It was just funny. And then,
I'm going to tell everyone
everybody.
that was an infection.
It was all you. It was all because, yeah. So anyway, so I read it. So shortly after it came out, I was teaching it. And so before I could teach it, I needed to read it. And so Lee and I read it. It was part of the World's Smallest Book Club. And you don't know what's happening, but he tells you everything that's happening, right? Beth is the narrator. And when I got to the final 20, 30 pages, I sat alone in my apartment because Lee and I lived like we never lived together until after our kids were adults. Like we were married and stuff and we were together. We've been together since, 2005. We've been together a long time. But we didn't live in the same house because our kids went to different schools. So I'm sitting alone in the apartment that I had with my kids and cried till I almost puked. Straight through, read it, couldn't stop, uncontrollable, and I loved it so much. I was so in love with this book that, like, even though I knew what was coming, I still got surprised by it, and I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And then by the time I finally calmed myself down, in the epilogue, there's a line that says, and this, and it gets to me every fucking time, the line says, the book thief died yesterday. So no matter when you read it, it's literally just yesterday. Broken. And again, of course, that's how it ends. Broken again. And I know it's like a book that makes me sob uncontrollably like that I shouldn't love. But that was my first experience with it. And then I taught it. And then I had a bunch of students loving and hating me for making them read this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just loved you for making me read this book, even though it's... When I think about reading this book, I can just imagine everything that happening in it happening under a big gray cloud. It's like everything's like gray and dark.
Yeah.
That almost feels like the world that this happens in. Obviously, that's not the case there. Stuff happens in like summer or whatever. But like, it's
But the
dark,
cloud is
right?
World War II. The cloud is Nazis.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's persecution and war and like suffering and pain, but within that, the thing that I found so incredibly wonderful about this book is so much humanity and like so much because it's Liesel
Memminger. Liesel is how they say
Liesel. Liesel?
Well, because the German pronunciation is the hard e.
Okay.
Liesel. Yeah.
Liesel is a child when you like she is like I don't know, 8 or 11 when you first, like, I think she's 11 when she first moves to live with the Hubermans. And so not only it's this melting pot, right? So she's a child, and so sometimes you get these like bursts of just childhood fun and like the joy to be a child, right? They're like running around playing games, stealing apples, like, but there's this constant undercurrent of like fear and persecution. And also, as the reader, like, you know what's going to happen, like you said, you know what's going to happen, because this is happening in Nazi Germany. And so you're kind of always waiting for something for something really dark to hit you in the face. You're always just kind of like waiting for it. And I was kind of shocked at how that it didn't happen more, you know. So then when something like the Bread Eaters rolls around, like there's a chapter called I think the Bread Eaters, it breaks you, because you've been reading this book, like you're like reading to people, okay, something terrible's gonna happen, it's terrible. Okay, actually, this is really joyful. I really like these characters. Such childhood joy. And then this procession of Jews slowly walking through this town, emaciated, falling over, elderly people, women, like they're starving and they are being forced to walk to the concentration, and you are broken because you've actually been given a lot of humanity, a lot of joy, a lot of like growing. You can see this relationship, like you can see relationships and love like growing between like Liesl and Hans, and Liesl and Rosa especially. So Rosa is Liesl's kind of adoptive mother or foster mother. And yeah. Rosa, I mean, if we think Peg is a hard nut, geez Louise, like
Rosa Huberman
does nothing but yell and scream at everybody. She scowls all the time.
Calls them assholes.
She calls them assholes. She calls her a Saumensch, which I think, is that not like asshole in German? I don't know. Saumensch?
No,
like,
Arschloch is asshole in German. So Saumensch is pig girl.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. So she calls Liesl like Saumensch from the time that she arrives for the next like 5 years or whatever.
Her whole life.
Yeah. Calls her a Saumensch. But you know that she loves this girl. And like you see this relationship developing. And also you see the relationship developing with Hans Huberman, who is like Ulysses. He is this like calming, wise, like loving person who's like quite introverted. He's quite quiet, you know, he just goes about his day. He's a very humble man. Like he is such a wonderful human, and you can see his love for Liesl growing, and you know, so and also like the relationship between Liesl and the boy that lives on his street. Rudy. Oh God, childhood Rudy, love, please.
Rudy Steiner. Listen, I just want to say there's so many, this book is so quotable and lovely, but here's the thing that I'm going to get upset. The only thing that's worse than a boy who hates you is a boy who loves you.
Yes. Oh my God.
My God.
Yes.
And it's
oh
like,
God. Yeah.
Breaks. He loves her so much, and she loves him back, but she doesn't understand, because they're children, and because the opening scene is her brother dying, and because her mother's been taken away from her, and because she never knew her father, and because this little blonde matchstick, I love that his hair's on fire all the time, and you know, and he's just this, he's so subversive, because a kid like him in a different book, he's dumb, but he's the smartest kid. He's the strongest kid. He's the fastest kid. He's the most loving kid. His heart is big. He's like perfect. He's the supermensch. He's the Superman, right? He's the ubermensch. And he literally is the ubermensch. Like he's the greatest person. And so you juxtapose him against Hans. Like these are the people that she loves the most, are these people who are just good to her. And so she doesn't know how to get close to them. She can't get close to all of them. And she, but anyway, that line, it oh kills me every time. The only thing worse than a boy who hates you is a boy who loves you. Yeah. And that is true. For her, it's absolutely true. And now when you're that age, it is true. Because she doesn't know how to handle it. They're all hormonal messes in the middle of a war.
Yeah.
That's a mess.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was just shocked at like how much, because I was ready to read a book about war. Mm-hmm. I was ready to read a book about pain and suffering and war, and that is all in there. But what catches you and what pulls you along is is the humanity, is all the you know, is like Liesel, sorry, Liesel writes this little book for the guy who is now living in a basement, and the whole thing is in the book, like illustrations and all, and you're just like, because you can see this little girl, like, I mean, what, she's probably like 12 or 13 at the time, but you can see
when Max moves in. Yeah, she's, yeah, that's probably about right. Yeah,
right. And like, so you're reading it like knowing that she is that age, and that's another thing about this book, is like that it's always, there's a reason there are lots of coming of age books, you know, because that time in your life, everybody can remember, well, you know, most people can remember how mad it was to be a human going from childhood to like to a teenager. It's such an intense time of your life. You've got all these big feelings and you have no idea what to do with them, and like things are, your body's changing, things outside are changing, expectations are changing. And so I think that's why there are so many coming of age stories, is because people can relate. People can relate to how that feels, right? And that is a very pivotal moment in your life. And so it's just so poignant that she's going through all that, but she is also living through war and observing persecution, and just, and you know, and suffering through the grief of losing her brother and her mother, like you said, and also like, but also just like trying to figure out if the boy that she likes her back, and trying to figure out, you know, how to stay out of trouble because her mother, her foster mother, might like throw a shoe at her or something, and like it's so complex. There are so many complex things and feelings happening, but it is wrapped up in the most beautiful language. Like I appreciate beautiful language. So like if I'm reading a poem, it needs to be both accessible and beautiful in equal measures. Like I get lost sometimes if there's too much image, if there's an overload of imagery, like an overload, if there's too much explanation of like the color of the trees or like how the ground felt, like I get lost and annoyed. But the way the author uses language in this book is like nothing I've seen. It is so beautiful. Like the way he uses like color, and like he said, the day I saw the book thief next was red. Like, and you're just, yeah. It's so simple, but so beautiful. And it wraps everything up together so beautifully. And so it's not hard to read it, if that makes sense. Like you just want to soak it all in, all of the little complex bits, all of the different feelings you have because your characters are feeling that way. It's just, and also what he does is he gives you hope. He gives
death,
you,
by gives the way, everybody, the narrator is death.
Yeah.
Giving you hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I felt so, I was like, I'm being trolled.
You are.
Because he gives you, you're like, nothing good is going to happen in this book. I know nothing good is going to happen in this book, but beautiful things do happen. Mm. You know, like Liesel breaks into the mayor's house.
Oh, I love it.
To like steal books. And then she realizes that the mayor's wife, like, no, she's there. And then they have this very like, nothing is said, but Liesel knows that she can come in and read books and the mayor's wife will just be there and nothing is said. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely,
it is beautiful.
And
it is.
And so you're given lots of hope, and you fully invested in the characters. Like I just, Hans Huberman is, he's not infallible. He has his own demons. Like at one point, I think he smacks Liesel around the face.
He does it, but that's the most, I was going to ask you about that. So I'm glad you brought it up. That is the only time. Like you're like, you never know when Rose is going to throw something at her and it's a shoe full of love, but she's going to throw it.
Oh yeah.
And she's going to be like, Zalmensch!
Yeah.
And, but Hans would never, but when he slaps her, that is the most loving thing he's ever done, because mm-hmm. he slaps her when they're sitting outside in public after she steals the book from the book burn and it's burning her skin, but she can't. And that is like unbelievable. And she says, "I hate Hitler." And he smacks yes. her and he says, "Can't ever say that." And then he gives her a life lesson and says, "That's the least thing that your papa slapping you is the least worst thing that could happen." And then he explains it all to her. And it is like the most loving touch that he could do, but it also broke him to do it.
Yeah.
And you juxtapose that with his own children, his blood children, and Hans Jr. is a Nazi. And yet he loves him, and we sort of don't hate him. Like, it's easy to be Hans Jr.'s a dick, but also he doesn't know any better.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because Hans Sr. didn't slap him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, to me, that's the moment where he's like, "I didn't slap Hans Jr. and tell him Hitler's bad, but you know," like, he didn't say anything. So by not saying or doing anything, his son becomes a Nazi in a country of Nazis. That's just what's going to happen to a young child. He's a young man. He's a teenager during Hitler's rise. So that's all he knows. And because Hans Huberman never says no to him, he doesn't, because he's, like you said, he's this really nice, easygoing, unassuming guy. So to me, that was him. And again, I don't know if I'm reading into it, but my read is that is him saying, like, "I'm going to correct." Now, he knows Liesl hates Hitler, which he's pleased about, but it's also still, you need to have a lesson about Hitler. They read Mein Kampf. Mein Kampf is a very important book in this book. And then they paint it and they whitewash it, but yes. they acknowledge it. They acknowledge the power of Hitler and the man, and he's going to raise Europe, and he's never going to raise a weapon. Like, Hitler doesn't fire a weapon except at himself. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's so like words, the power of word. Max writes the book and it's just glorious and heartbreaking and everything. But like, so to me, so that moment when Hans slaps her, that's how I read it. And again, I've read it 6 times. So I've had that many times to make that decision. I don't know that I thought that on the first time. So how did you feel when Hans slapped her?
I think I was angry at Hans. I think I knew I did it. But that's the thing. So like, I'm excited to read this book again in the future. So I always wait a few years before I can, I can mostly forget what happened and then I read it again. But yeah, when he slapped it, I think I understood why. I understood why he did it, but I was angry at him. And I was also like, I was kind of, you're taken aback because like, you're like, no, you're the calming presence. You're the guy who's getting me through this book, which I know will make me cry at some point. Like, you can't be the person who makes me feel anything but chill and easy. but I knew I did it. But I was angry at him. Yeah. I was like, you know, because Liesl is at such a delicate age. Like, you know, that the age that she is when he slaps it, it's like that'll become that you know, it's very formative. A big part of who you are is formed on what you learn and what happens to you, and I think in those years. And so I was conflicted, but what you said makes complete sense.
Because I struggle with my relationship with Hans Jr. because I don't blame him. And it's weird to be like, there's two active Nazis in this book. The woman who owns the shop and Hans Jr.
Yeah, she's
the one where if you don't walk in and say Heil Hitler when you walk in. And she's got the frowning picture of Hitler on her wall and everything, which, of course, also doesn't survive the bombing of Himmel Street. Mm-hmm. And she's even not portrayed as a total villain. She's just kind of a bitch. You know, she's like bitchy old lady. But like, Hans Jr. isn't necessarily portrayed as a villain. He's just portrayed as a victim as much as anybody else is. And they're all victims. This is a book of victims. And it's also a book much like In Still Life. And I think it's a good pairing because it's also circumstantial. It's like, if Rudy's dad had let Rudy go, Rudy lives.
Oh my God. Isn't that?
And he says that. He says that out loud, right? But if Rudy doesn't go, if Rudy goes, is Liesl sitting in the basement during that air raid? Like, you know, the surprise air raid, like all the things have to happen the way that they happen for Lisa to live. I'm convinced that if one of them was going to die, like, because Lisa would have been somewhere different. If Rudy was gone, Lisa might have been over at the Steiners comforting the sisters and like taking his place as like, you know, big sister to them, yeah. Because Rudy was, because his older brother was getting ready to be deployed as well soon. And so she would have been there to kind of step in Rudy's place and maybe, you know, reading to them or whatever. And she would have died in her holding her, his little sister. Oh my God. And so the opening, now that I know, and the book tells you, like, death stops you midway through the book and reminds you that Rudy's going to die.
Yeah.
And it still upsets it's still me every time.
Horrible.
Horrific. Yeah. The opening lines, when you first meet the book thief, I meet her three times. The first time is when her brother dies. Second time when the pilot dies, when Rudy gives him the teddy bear. The dying American pilot.
Oh my gosh. You see, I forget the details.
The third time is when Rudy dies. And the line is, he doesn't tell you who it is, but it just says, the book thief howled is the line. Howled. And it is. And then, but when he visits her later, when that scene happens, she's not howling because he reminded you that he already was, that's what was happening. Oh, yeah. And she's just kissing Rudy then because she refuses to kiss Rudy until he dies. And then she tells his dad, because his dad survives the war, and she says, I kissed Rudy. And she's like, I didn't know if she didn't know if he'd want to hear it, but she thought he did. You know, she was weird talking about, you know.
Yeah. The thing that makes me cry is the way is here finding Hans and Rosa.
That's horrible.
Oh my God. Horrific. It was after.
And he did it. Zuzak did it perfectly, right? He gives you Rudy first and then Hans and Rosa. Like, he couldn't do it the other way, because if she did it the other way, she doesn't find Rudy.
Yeah.
She'd never leave them. But so it's perfectly written and also awful. And also, fuck you, Mark Zuzak. And also, I love this book. And the fact that I've read it six times, even though it makes me, like, I get upset thinking about it. Like, just saying.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the book thief howled. Just say the name Rudy. Like, if I just say Rudy, I automatically think Rudy Steiner, and I'm always upset. And it's, and this is his grandmother's life story. That's how he's Australian. It's this, his grandmother was Liesl. It's fictionalized a little, but this is how he's Australian. Like, Liesl dies in Sydney. His grandma was called Liesl.
Oh my gosh, really?
Isn't that crazy bananas? Like, this stuff happened to her.
What? Oh, yes, but that's it. And then you remember this happened to people.
This happened to people.
This happened to actual people. And like, the thing that stays with me is what I said earlier, the procession of, like, the slow procession of Jews being marched towards a concentration camp, or being marched from one concentration camp to another concentration camp. And they are starving. They are emaciated. They are some of them are just, like, falling, and if they fall over, they get beaten, and so that's why that chapter's called Bread Eaters, because people started leaving bread, like, on the ground
because of Hans did it first, and he got whipped, and that's actually what, and again, it's what saves Max, right? Because he does that, they have to send Max away, and while Max gets caught and sent to a concentration camp, Max would have died otherwise. So, like, him doing that. They get Max, like, Max has to leave because Hans did that, but Hans did it because he couldn't sit there and do it anymore. And so, And what did you make of, and I'm just curious about this, that she never tells Rudy until the very end, until after the Bread Eaters chapter? Like, did you believe, like, I believed she would do it because Hans told her to not tell even Rudy. But was that hard for you to believe that, as close as she was to Rudy, that she kept the Max secret from him?
No, I don't think it was, because I think she spent quite a lot of time in the presence of Max, and she also watched him get really sick, right? Because he had to sleep in a really cold basement, so she had to watch him get really sick, and he almost died, and she was like watching him almost die. So I think she knew the gravity of things. I think And I think she also trusts, I think she also really trusted Hans. Like, I think she trusted what he was telling her to do, even though she may not have fully understood it. I think that, and that's why I think it was so horrible. It was so hard for me to read when she finds Hans and he's like lying on the ground and she just wants to sit there and like hold his hand, because she trusted him so wholeheartedly, and like she just wanted him to be done. And like, so she would have done anything that he told her to, I think. And because he just had that presence, like he was taking care of it, but he also respected it, and she knew that he loved him. And I think that was quite alien to her. And so I think she would have done anything that he told her to. And I think that's why it was important that he ended on her finding Hans and Rosa, and her whole, like, I think that's why it was important, because I think above everyone, I think she loved Hans the most. I think she loved Rudy, but I think she loved Hans the most. That was my reading of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. And I think Death thinks so too. So, yeah. And I find it, they were like, first time he tells us that Hans and Rosa are dead, they were so soft. Their souls are so soft, he says. And then we go back and we flash back and we got to live it again. So he tells us they're all dead. Rudy's dying. His sister's dying. Hans and Rosa are dying. Beazle's going to live. He tells you. And then we have to back up and fucking live it all.
Yeah.
And it's like, what am I doing to myself? And then we find out that Hans, was his soul was sitting up like all the best souls do. And then at the end, Liesl, the book thief, died yesterday. And her papa, her soul was sitting up. And he doesn't have to say like all the best souls do. And then Death and Liesl take a walk and talk about the book thief.
Oh, I know.
So the Death picks the book thief book. The book that you're reading is a book that she wrote about her life, sort of. Like, and then Death is the fucking book thief. He steals the book. From that day, she never finds the book after so she just assumes she loses Hans, she loses Rosa, she loses Rudy, she loses everything. She gets Max back, which is lovely, yeah. But she loses the book. And then fucking Death is the book thief too. Son of a bitch. So good, right? Like, what a great thing at the end. You're like, oh.
So good. You know what? I think let's chat after I've read it for six times.
Yeah.
So like, let's chat in 12 years.
Happy to do that. Yeah.
Because because I've only ever read it once, and I was distraught at the end of it. Like my partner did not know what to do. So I was like on the bed, I was like, like this snot all over my
right?
face.
You're
like there were like 10 tissues.
I know.
Oh, puke crying, exactly. And so I was trying to absorb all those little details at the end.
Yeah.
All I could think about is in my head was his sitting on the ground holding Hans's hand. And I was just like, so all these details that you're like, isn't this genius?
You couldn't get past it.
Get past it. Like, she's
that's okay. I think that's okay. I tell him I'm sorry. And but
snotting all over the
place. Snotting all over. He's like, oh. But no, I mean, like, Lee, when she read it the first time, Rudy died. This is how she did it. She closed the book.
Okay.
And walked away. And then when she, 3 pages later, they find her. And you know they're going to die because you relive it, though. And then when Liesl finds them. And then when Liesl finds Hans, and she closes the book again. So she, those last 10 pages took her days or 20. I read it in a go, like you did, sobbing, gasping for breath. Destroyed, but then I love it. Like, I love this book. So, like, the conversation that I think we should have, and again, read it again. It's rereadable, right? So you were miserable, but you'll totally read it again.
Oh, because, but I cared about these characters enough to feel that way. You know, I didn't feel betrayed by the author, because also the author had told me multiple times that this was going to happen. So I didn't feel I think maybe with what happened to Ginny in Still Life, you always feel like betrayed. You're like, no.
Yeah,
like, you feel like,
motherfucker,
betrayed.
What are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. But like, you knew that this was going to happen in The Book Thief. And so, like, I knew it was coming, but I was blown away at how much I cared about the characters in order enough to feel that way. And that is why I love this book, because and also for all the for all the hope and the joy and the beautiful things that happen in between all the awful things, because I can't just read a book that is through and through horrible, terrible things. I just can't. Like this, I will read this book because of the characters in the book.
Yeah, I agree completely. And so this was something, I was just pulling it up because we had emailed each other back and forth. And this is what you just said is it. So like both of these books, there's only one logical ending for both of them. As much as Evelyn is a boss,
you want to live forever, yeah.
She's not gonna. Death is our narrator. Death comes for us all. And so what is it about? Like, these are two books we love that are sad. And I think you just said it, though. It's like these characters are real and they're worth coming back to. It's not a turnoff, right? To say, read this book that death is the narrator. Read this book about an old lady who's 60 when you meet her. You know she's not.
Exactly.
You know she's not going to make it to the end.
Exactly.
Lots of horrible things, like Claude. Like
Claude.
When Claude goes, that's the worst.
Yeah.
Right. For me, for Lee, it was Claude over everybody else. Right.
It was Cress for me.
It was Cress for you.
Cress broke my absolute heart because I think he was my favorite character. There was just so much. He was just such a. He was like a father. He was like a granddad. I'm trying to find a word that it's like, he was your safe bet.
That's exactly true. That's right. Yeah. That's absolutely true. Yeah. And so, yeah. So the question that I wanted us to ask about is like, these are downers, right? And that is this. So the question was, is this the last place that you can get away with this? And I mentioned in the email, like indie movies can do it sometimes, but like nobody sees those either. Are books the last place where the creator can say no? Where like we see all the time studios get in the way and you're like, this movie was good and the last 10 minutes didn't make any sense because somebody was like, that ending can't happen. You're like, why?
Yeah, why?
Right? Like, and again, ultimately, I think it was the right choice, but the studio got in the way and kept Andy and Ducky apart at the end of Pretty in Pink. But at the end of the day, I actually think that's the right choice. I don't want Ducky and Andy to be together. I don't think they should be a couple. But the original ending of Pretty in Pink, spoiler alert, Pretty in Pink, Ducky and Andy don't end up together at the end of that movie, right? And so John Hughes then made another movie a couple years later, Some Kind of Wonderful, where he fixes that and the two people he wanted to be together. And I actually think that's a better film, even though, you know, John Cryer's performance as Ducky is exceptional. So my question is like, we love these books that are sad and whatever. So is literature, as the host of Literature for Life, which I like the way you say it better, because I think British people say everything better than we dumb Americans, but like, literature, is literature the best? Is that the place where we can really discover humanity? You've said it several times, so I think I know your answer, but like, where you can get away with that, where other forms of art, there's somebody else butting in saying, nope, you can't have that and you can't do that. Where books are like, books can be sad, but still be full of hope. Books can address and explore humanity for as long as it takes. Like, the book is as long as it needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I think so. And I think part of that is, books often create more space for the reader to join in. So I think movies, it's very easy to watch a movie, but also be disassociated is a big word, but like, it's very easy to almost passively watch a movie. I'm very guilty of that. Like when me and Ria have a conversation about films, I'm always like, I watch purely from an entertainment point of view, but she is
in it.
Deep dive into it. Yes. Whereas I think, because everything's there for you, you don't really have to, you can look, if you choose to, you can look deeper into things, but everything is already kind of there for you. And I guess the same can be said for some readers, but I think books create a lot more space for readers. Well, good books create a lot more space for readers to get involved because you use your own imagination, and that is different for everybody. You don't know what you can't climb into someone else's head unless they draw a picture and let them show you how what these characters look like to them, what this street looks like to them, what the sky looked like to them when everything got bought. Like, you can't fully climb into someone's head. And so that book creates, it creates more space for the reader to take control of, or to have a say in what the narrative does. Which, and I think that's part of why books, books allow that kind of, that that kind of more, it, it, books can be closer to reality. I think a good book is one that you can relate to, is one that you can, well, this is for me, is one that you can, with characters that you understand, because they are, you see them as real people experiencing real things, even if there's like a touch of magical realism, because it's like real life. And like, you don't, in real life, you know, people going, everybody knows that real life can suck a lot of, like, it can suck a lot. And as an adult, you're faced with that all the time. And you have to learn how to, you have to learn how to cope with that in your own ways. And then, so, and so to have something that you love because you love the people in it, and there are so many bits of joy, but it's also, there's so many, there's so much sadness, and there's so much heartbreak, and there's so, we experience all of those feelings all the time. And so if a book comes to the end and the people that we love have died, and you know, the people who are still alive are by themselves, and it's really sad, but also it's real. It feels real. And you're like, you can appreciate all the good things that happened. And I just, yeah, I feel, and like you said, like, I, maybe there's less people involved in that process. You know, the author can be like, no, no, this is important to me, because I don't know. I feel like I'm rambling now.
No, I love it. I'm listening. I'm like totally wrapped with what you're saying. I'm basking and bathing in your glory.
And swimming and ducking.
And swimming and all of it. No, no, I agree. Because, I mean, obviously you have editors, you have publishers. There's these other people, obviously. The singular nature of writing a book, obviously, as you know, is you're writing a book. You are a writer, Jess.
Thank you.
Who writes. And you are doing the work. And you're alone. And it's a weird thing, right? I have a book deal, but the nobody asked me to write the first one. Did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you sell it and you're like, oh, do you want to write five more? You're like, yes.
Okay.
Yes. But, you know, and again,
you're basically halfway there.
I am at, yes, I'm at 2.5 right now. It is a very singular, weird, inside your head process. You talk to people. I mean, Lee's my first and last reader. She, every time I write something, I go talk to her about it. You know, like things that kind of stick in your head, or things that happening in the day, I like can comment it on the book, right? Like, we're watching Lost for the first time ever. I've never watched Lost. And there's this, okay. The most magical thing about the island of Lost is when Kate is locked in a cage in a zoo for a week, her armpit hair doesn't grow. And that doesn't make any sense. And I find it ridiculously.
It's because she's a woman. And when was it? Like early noughties? What was it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Armpit hair did not exist then.
Well, but all the facial hair and all the men grow, but like the women's underarm. And again, I know they show people shave.
So
I
get timeless. Like,
right. But you see people shave in the camp, but like you're in a cage. So therefore, when she's climbing out of the cage, full armpits, there should be a little pit hair. So. Because that's human. That's a thing. It doesn't make her less sexy. It just makes her a human being.
Yeah.
And so I wrote, so that was annoying me. So like in the chapter I was working on, I wrote it in. I wrote in about like them being comfortable. This, I'm doing my version of Pride and Prejudice. So they get comfortable about Mr. Collins being around, the sisters do. So now they just like walk around in tank tops on a weekend with pit hair and they don't care.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
We love to see it.
Because now he's part of the family.
Yeah. You know?
So they don't care anymore. So you can, that's the thing about writing, is you can work through your stuff. Again, this is his grandma's story. So he was trying to cope with what you said. This fucking happened to people. When Sarah Winman sat down to write this book about love and loss and pain and what, again, the aftermath of World War II and like And again, it's very important that it's in Italy, right? Because they were at opposite sides of the war.
Yeah.
It's very important that it's in Italy, and it's about this. They're still just people, like the British people. He was there fighting in the war against them, and now he's just there living amongst them. That's important. She's having a conversation about humanity again. And it's lovely and it's beautiful, but it's also a downer, man, because people are hard to deal with. But there is, like you said, there's always still hope. Like, Alice is our hope. And Liesl has hope. Like, Liesl meeting, being to hug Max and roll around on the ground with Max. And, like, that's hope. And, like, Max is now her best friend forever. And, you know, I'm assuming he doesn't move to Australia with her, but, you know, they're going to be in touch forever. Exactly. And that is important. And so there's always, like, a nugget there. So I think everything that you said is absolutely true. And that, but that literature, what I love that you said is, and also hate it, when you're watching the film version and that character dies and you're like, Jeffrey Rush didn't die. Right? Fill in the blank. Like, whoever that is, right? Whoever's playing it, I'm watching Lost. Again, characters are dying left, right? That actor is like on something else. You know, and then eventually, like in life, those actors pass away. But like in the show, the actor died, the character died, the actor didn't, the actress is doing something different. Cool. And that was probably a flashback, and they'll bring the character back because that's what they're doing. But in a book, when they're real, they're really gone. And yes, you can go back from the beginning and read it again, but Rudy still dies on the third page of this book, and he's still dead. And Rudy is forever 14.
Yeah.
He says that right in here. Forever in Liesl's heart, Rudy is 14. He doesn't, and her little brother is forever 6.
Yeah.
He keeps showing up, remember?
Yeah.
He's just there, like,
yeah,
annoying her on the steps of the mayor's house. And so I think, well, he's really like telling her to quit being a dick is what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
You're being mean, Liesl, he's saying. But so I think you're right, is like literature leaves space. So you're right. It is still a plot. It's still scripted. Things happen that happen, but it gives you the chance to get to see these people and mourn them and also celebrate their life in a way that, like, books teach us how to accept death more than movies do, because you're going to see that actor in something else. But like, there's no sequel to this book, right? It's over. This is the end. And so we can mourn them. And it's like very hard and horrible, but like hopeful and cathartic, because we live, we've learned, we've had this experience. We've lived and loved with these characters. And, you know, like when Ulysses with the man he loves dies, oh my God. Was so bad. And then you're like, Peg won't love him. And you're like, God damn it. Right. You're just you're like so worried and you're upset for him and you're on his side and he's real. And when they finally make a movie or TV version of Still Life, we'll both watch it and it'll be good. But at the end of the day, James McAvoy or whoever plays him will be fine, but it won't be the same because it's still just a portrayal of that. It's not real. And I know this is fiction and these people aren't real, but they feel real to us. And I think you nailed it.
You're saying,
yeah, they're there. Yeah.
They're there. They're in your head. You're thinking about them as you're reading them. Like, they are in your head. You can't get closer than in your head. Like,
right.
You know, you can watch TV, but like, you can't get closer than in your head. And that these people are real. They are in your head. Yes.
Jess, thank you for this. And I just want to say on air, you are a writer. Congratulations for the writing that you're doing. Telling stories matters. These are very popular books. Right? They've moved millions and millions of people. If our books move 3 people, because we're not Sarah Winman and Mark Zusek, that's also okay.
Yeah.
Art matters, right? And that is why your show, Literature for Life, is so good. I love to listen to it. It's a must listen, everybody, because you talk, and all of Femon is great. I mean, it's the best, but it's like the stuff that you guys cover is really important, and art matters. And we learn to live. So listening to I've experienced new writers and new books from listening to you talk to people that I haven't, you know, people I have voices I haven't heard about books I haven't read. And so I just want to thank you for doing the show and reminding everybody that books are cool.
Thank you so much. That is so sweet. And it's so nice to have people like you championing me on it's because Rhea's the same, and I'm lucky enough to have a lot of people in my life who call me, or they'll just introduce me as a writer, and then I have to like blush and be like, oh my God. But no, it's thank you. You're right, art matters. And sometimes I'm like, oh gosh, why do I just want to spend my whole life just writing stories? And then we have chats like this, and I'm like, this is why, because stories impact people. Stories can change the way people live. Stories can stay with us. Like, stories are important. And so, yeah, thank you. And thank you for another wonderful chat and for all your wonderful insights. And
Great.
Can we do this again? Can we do this again
please.
In 6 months?
Yeah, we'll
Let's
do it. We'll,
books.
Yeah, we'll do it again. We'll email each other a new recommendation.
Yay.
And then in months down the line, because you're going to be taking a writing hiatus.
Oh, yes.
Which means you'll be working your ass off. And I'm very excited for that. And I think that's really cool. So, yes, we'll do it again. We'll do another. You'll pick a gem. I'll pick a gem. We'll probably break each other's hearts again.
Yeah.
And that'll be good. And so we want to make sure it's books we haven't read either. So if we recommend something, I'm like, oh, I've read it. Then we'll dig deep into our bag of tricks.
For me, can I say, because you read 200 books a year.
But I hadn't read this.
Amazing. I'm honestly blown away. When you were like, oh, I've never, I was like, oh my gosh.
And Tin Man, I've got
everything.
I have Tin Man to read.
Okay. Sarah, I haven't read Tin Man either.
I've got it to read. So I'm excited. Yeah. This is delightful. And anyway, thank you for making the show. And thank you for, I'm excited. Thanks to Rhea for introducing us.
Yeah. Thank you for chatting with me. This has been so cool.
Dude, this is good. So my website is arfarina.com, or you can pick up my book and check stuff out. So please do that. And where would people hear of you on the interwebs?
Well, before we tell them that, let's just make sure that they know that your book is called Welcome to Mansfield.
It is. Thank you.
Yes.
It is called Welcome to Mansfield. There's a picture of it right there behind me.
Oh, yes.
Okay. I don't know how to move.
We'll put a big old link
reverse.
In the show notes.
Thank you. It's hard for me to say, but I am very proud of it. I really do like it. And the second one, that other Dashwood girl, is with the editor. And the third one is called Universal Truth, which is my retelling of Pride and Prejudice with Mary Bennett as the star.
And so if you are a reader who likes to know that there'll be more than one book, that the story won't end with the first book, read Tony's book, because he's got six.
I mean, they're all technically standalone, but they're interconnected in that
exactly.
They're all roads lead to Mansfield,
and they're all written by you, which is key.
Yes, that's true. Thank you for that. Yes, and Tanya is going to have me write a story for her 52 Love short story collection, and we will be revisiting two characters from Welcome to Mansfield in that. Yeah,
it's the characters. It's the characters.
I love them. They are my favorite. I love to talk to them, and they all, you know, they all have their own soundtracks. So each book has its own playlist because I listen to music while I'm writing. And so the music that I'm listening to, or the music that is mentioned in the books. So if you go to my website and go to music, you can click the place. So if you're reading Welcome to Mansfield and you want to hear the songs that Junior is talking about or thinking about, you can listen along.
Yes. I love that. I love that.
Thank you. So how do we find you on the internet?
Okay, so you can find me. I am on Instagram at Jess_B Davies, Davies with an E. I have a little blog that I write on about twice a year called 600 Words
It's
Online.
Delightful.
600 Words Online. And that's it, really.